is the Revisionary Podcast with your host, Juan Carlos. The Revisionary
Podcast. Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of the Revisionary Podcast. And as always, I'm your host, Juan Carlos. You know, week in and week out, you guys keep coming back. And honestly, I'm here for it. I am very much here for it. If this is your first time listening to the Revisionary Podcast, the way this works is we bring on guests, usually comedians, who tell a nonfiction story about their lives in which they wish things had gone a little bit different. Afterwards, I give them an opportunity to tell the same exact story, except this time they can change any facts or details that they would like about their story. Pretty cool, huh? Well, I think so. This week has been kind of fun for me because I've actually taken a mini vacation. I've been traveling and, you know, going out and seeing the world and doing things that I normally wouldn't do. For example, I went for a walk. That may not sound like a lot to you, but, you know, 2020 turned me into a gamer. So that was probably the most exercise I've done in a while. And it was impressive. I made it a whole block without getting winded. In addition to that, you know, I've been reaching out to people and I'm very excited for this next guest. Yes, I am. I'm very excited. Her name is Sharita, and or I believe it's pronounced Sharita. But the way I met her was during lockdown, I was actually still looking for ways to do comedy. You know, I just wanted to make sure that I stayed sharp so that when things eventually opened, I'd be ready. So I actually found this online mic and it was pretty cool. And I got to connect with this community of comedians that I probably would not have had the opportunity to meet if not for COVID. So I started interacting with them and we started hanging out. And she was one of the people who I actually met through this this mic. I thought she was hilarious. So I knew that I just had to, you know, get her here on the Revisionary Podcast to, you know, come and talk to you guys. And it's funny because I didn't get a chance to exchange information with her. And then, I don't know, finally one day Facebook was kind of like, hey, you might know this person. So I looked at it and I was like, oh, it's her. So I kind of took that as a sign. I was like, yep, definitely got to get her on the Revisionary Podcast. So, you know, here we are. Let's see if we can get a hold of her. Hello, Sharita. How are you?
I'm good, Juan Carlos. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm doing phenomenal. Welcome to the Revisionary Podcast. We're really excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. This is my first time.
Yeah. So it's funny. So do you want to tell the story or should I? How we met?
You tell the story how we met because people probably won't believe me. They're like, nah, you know.
So true story. When I first got out here, out to Washington, I was like, man, I really want to do comedy. But everything was shut down. Like there was absolutely nothing going on anywhere. So I finally I got a message from this like guy on the internet. He was like, hey. You know, I'm looking for comedians. I'm like, okay, I'm a comedian. What's up? He's like, we have this Zoom open mic. I'm like, perfect. This is an opportunity for me to run material. Right. And she was one of the first person that I actually met through the open mic. Like, she was just on the list. I was like, oh, hi.
we're just in the Zoom world. Like, and it's weird because in real life, we probably wouldn't meet because of travel restrictions or just travel in general.
Right.
You know, on Zoom, you just turn your laptop on. Like, oh, let me see what I can see. And hope that my laptop works long enough to be in a Zoom show.
No, that's exactly right. That's what I thought. Okay, so I will say this. Like, as much as I didn't love all the Zoom stuff, I do think it was cool because I got to connect with people from a whole bunch of scenes that I might not have met otherwise.
Yes. So that's the good thing about Zoom.
Yeah, because you're originally from New York, right?
I am. I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, born and raised in Red Hook, and then lived up the Flapper side. And I, 21 years old, I left New York.
Wow. So you've been gone, what, 2-3 years now?
No, I've been gone 22 years.
Yes. See, and the trick to flattery is never add more years than you're absolutely sure of.
It's okay. I'm one of those women that I don't have to lie about my age. I'm perfectly okay with that.
Okay. So, no, yeah. But I legitimately didn't. I was like, I don't know. She could be 25. She could be 48. I don't know.
I'm 43. You was close.
I just threw a number out there.
I know, right? No, don't worry about it. I'll be 44 years old and like your viewers will be looking at it like, nah, she's lying. No, really. 44 years old this year and I'm excited about it.
Well, we're excited to have you. What have you been up to during the pandemic?
Well, unfortunately, I've been working. And you would say, like, why is that unfortunately? Because I've been forced to, like, write more jokes. It's already hard writing jokes and being a comedian, but it's harder to be funny. So mm-hmm. I'm getting booked for shows online, which is awesome, where I get to add international comedian to my title because I've been performing in the UK, Ireland, and now I have a show coming up in Wales. So I'm like, what? Well, that's mm-hmm. amazing. But I'm learning to be a cleaner comic because some people are like, you're a little sissy. And I'm like, sometimes. I think the dirty jokes get more laughs than the clean comedy.
Right.
And I just think that just based on the audience.
So just so that the revisionaries who are listening along understand what we're referring to, what exactly do you find as a clean comedy versus dirty comedy?
Clean comedy is, for me, you don't curse as much. And in my world, I have a lot of people that say the N-word. I don't use the N-word at all.
Right.
And the N-word for me is no. I don't like saying no. But the dirty comedy, it's talking about sexuality and things that we were told in Catholic school. Like, hey, we're not allowed to talk about that. We're not allowed to discuss about that. But I find that having children, and we have to have the birds and bees talk with them, I mm-hmm. have to put that comedy twist into it because it's already like, I really want to be talking to my kids about this stuff? I don't. But I don't want anybody else to talk to them about it.
Right.
So I want to take that material and put it on stage, but mm-hmm. water it down. So that way nobody's in the room uncomfortable. You want everybody to be like, yeah, girl, I feel sexy on my time, but I don't want to be like too pushing it.
Right. You know, it's funny because I've always wondered, like, if I'm considered a clean comic. For starters, I don't curse at all on stage at all. Mm-hmm. But I do, and I don't touch, I generally don't discuss, like, you know, anything sexual. Like, that's not in my repertoire, but I do touch on taboo issues, and I, you know, I do push the race button, you know what I mean? And, like, all those things. So I'm like, I don't know, am I a clean comic? Like, I don't, you know?
Right.
Like, if someone's children were listening to me, no problem. They just might have a lot of questions about political structures after they're done.
Right, but the great thing is they don't have to ask you, they just ask their parents.
And
you
right.
Wait.
It's not my problem.
Right? Good luck with that. No, clean comedy is it's what I've been told in the comedy world. Clean comedy gets you more bookings. Mm-hmm. But if you see me on Zoom, I'm really not that clean on Zoom because I always ask before I get on there. I'm like, hey, what can we do? And if it's a no holds barred and I'm just having fun and it's a 3-minute set, yeah, I'm just going to talk dirty and enjoy the time. But for the shows that I'm getting booked, like paid gigs, if it's 10 minutes or longer, yes, I'm going to be clean because mm-hmm. I want to get booked again.
Right. That makes sense. So,
but I stay away from race, though. I stay away from race and politics. I'm not. I can't do politics right now because
yeah.
my current career path.
Uh-huh.
Yes, so I stay away from politics.
Now I go in head first. I'm like, that's my. Let's go. Let's go. Let's discuss it. Let's talk about it. Let me tell you why both sides are stupid. This is what I think.
I'm on Facebook, I'll scroll through it and I'm like, I'll laugh, but I won't like comment. I'll just, ooh, I see it, and keep
going. I mean, look, I do talk a lot about my culture, which I think you've heard me. So it's kind of like a lot of those things too. I mean, you've heard me say some dicey things. I don't think anything's bad per se. But anywho,
about your own personal experience, can never be a bad thing to talk about.
Yeah, that's 100% right. And I try not to I try to make it a rule not to talk about any groups that I'm not a part of, unless I'm trying to support them or like speak positively on that group, like, you know, trying to uplift them.
Yes. You always make sure that you're an ally. So it's like safe space. Like, I support you guys, but I don't need to be included in every party. How about that?
Yeah, no, I agree. So is there anything else that's been going on in your life besides the Zoom shows?
The live shows are starting to open back up. So the only problem with that is I'm based here in El Paso, Texas. By Juarez. So I'm not allowed to go to Mexico. So a lot of my shows is strictly in El Paso, but we haven't really opened up. The venues won't work with us right now. So I'm trying to get more venues so we can get showcases going. Mm. And I'm finally got booked to the one El Paso comic strip, the one club we have. I finally got booked there. So I'm super ecstatic about that.
Nice. Congrats.
Thank you. Because at first, I also produce shows. And I was producing online open mics, not online. Open mics live, but now mm-hmm. We have other producers that are doing open mics, so I think I'm going to stay just towards showcases.
Okay. So once things open up, like if we were at 100%, would you be able to go to Juarez and perform?
No, I'm in the military. Military is not allowed in Juarez. And I don't have a reason to be there. I don't have family in Mexico. So that's another reason why we're not allowed over there.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was going to say, I was like, I don't know that I want to go to Juarez anyway. Like, I'm...
It used to be fun back in the day when we were allowed to go.
Right.
But now, like,
To all my Mexicanos and Chicanos and brethren out there, like, no shade. Yeah. No shade. It's just, like, when you pull up the reports, it's like one of those red zones where they're, like, high crime area.
Vive la raza all day. Vive
yeah, of course. Apoyamos, tú sabes, siempre con la raza, pero you know how it is. No, so that's pretty dope. Let's go ahead and we'll just jump right into this. The stage is yours. Go ahead and tell us your story.
Oh, well, so a lot of people don't know that I joined the Army when I was 21 years old. I had nothing else going for me. I wanted to be a writer. My mom told me no. And then I wanted to be a dancer. I got an audition. I was actually auditioned for the Alvin Ailey School of Dance.
Wow.
Let me know. So I was like, well, what do you want me to do? And she's like, I want you to marry Rich. And I looked at my stepdad and I'm like, that didn't work for you. So let me find something else to do. And at 21 years old, I was like, you know what? Let me try the Army. I didn't know how long I was going to last, first of all. I just figured it was something to do, something to get out of New York because I wanted to travel. We all say that we want to travel the world. But most importantly, I felt like I was portraying my hometown of New York because everybody, you know how many people move to New York to make it and become superstars? They become writers, authors. They're on acting, Broadway. And I did. I went to school to go and performing arts. So I was an actress in school.
And right.
I just, like, my mom and I, we just, ooh. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to be that one kid that's defiant. I joined the Army. I did. And I was stationed at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. And I traveled the world. I've been to Kuwait, Iraq, Afghanistan twice. And now I'm still in El Paso, Texas, 22 years later.
Wow.
And then the worst part about it. Yes, there's bad parts to being in the Army. Did you know you can get kicked out? You can get, we call it chaptered. In a normal job, you get fired.
Right.
But in the Army, they, like, move you around. So if you're not so good in one place, they'll move you around. And I don't know if you've seen the movie Sergeant Bilko, where they move Phil Hartman's character all the way to Alaska because he messed up so bad.
No.
Yeah. So there's, like, the running joke, like, if you mess up so bad, they send you to Alaska. I'm proud to report I never got sent to Alaska. I get sent to all these Texas places. I've been at Fort Hood, like, 6 years. I've been here in El Paso 12 years at Fort Bliss. And I'm like, why do you guys do that to New Yorkers? Like, you take us from the East Coast and you just, like, you know what? You need to be in the South. It's hot. I don't know.
Yeah, but darker. It's cheap.
It's cheap to live here, yeah. But I'm darker. I was yellow when I got here. I was like, now I'm what they're known as darkies. I'm like, I'm not that dark. Calm down. But yeah. I'm like Burke Forest out here. You know? So... But that, yeah, I enjoyed my time. I've met a lot of people. That's one thing about it. You meet so many different people. You see so many different people naked. So you have to respect them on that level. Because the Army literally puts you in positions to where you're showering, you're sleeping with these people. They come from all walks of life. And
so it's funny. I just want to clarify, just make sure we're on the same page. You mean, like, in the barracks, right? And you mean, like, you guys... Or, like, in your own beds, right? When you say sleeping together, like...
No, when we have to go to the field, we call them FTX missions, field missions.
Sure.
We have to pack up and we, like, drive out to the middle of nowhere and we set up the little tents. You're in a tent that's open. You have a cot. And whoever's next to you, to your right or your left, that's your roommate. And only in NTC, there are some places where the showers, there's no stalls. So, but you want that shower.
So, but at least it's just women, or right?
Yes, it is. It's not co-ed. It is same-sex bathrooms, but now when you have the transgender, it's a little bit more difficult. So we have
right, of course.
So that one's a little bit tough. But other than that, you get in where you fit in. We still have
toilets
that are next to each other with no stalls.
Really?
Yes.
So you guys are making eye contact?
It's eyes to knees.
Oh, wow. That's
about what you're having for lunch right now. I don't.
Why did they do that to you?
We don't know. But when we said, hey, I swear to defend the Constitution of the United States by all enemies, both foreign and domestic, for a paycheck, yes, sign me up.
All right. Well, you know, I get it, but go on.
So yes, I joined the army, and like I said, and the weird part about it is I'm the oldest of four kids. So the right. little brother called, he was like homesick. He was stationed at Fort McClellan, Alabama. So when he called, I just happened to answer the phone. I'm like, hey, bro, what's up? He's like, I'm homesick. And I'm like, well, why don't you just come home, come visit? He said, no, why don't you just come visit me? And I'm like, well, let me figure out how to save up money for a Greyhound bus ticket. He said, no, join the army. I was like, really? I got to join the army just to visit you?
Mm-hmm.
I joined the army, and then we ended up on the friends and family plan. So he had Fort Hood as a duty station. So that's how we picked Fort Hood for the whole family. So he was at Fort Hood. I joined, and I ended up at Fort Hood. And then our youngest brother joined, and he ended up at Fort Hood. So all three of us at Fort Hood tearing it up with our New York accents, having a good old time, showing how to drink for real.
I mean, I'm gonna be very honest with you. From what I've heard, you have to learn to drink to survive at Fort Hood, because I heard things get dicey down there.
Yes, we're just like, what is going on? Papa, what you doing after work? I'm a child of God. I'm gonna be in my room. That's what I'm doing after work. Nope.
Oh man. But
you know what? True story. Like, that was the first time I got invited to strip clubs, and I didn't know. But you just go in there, and like, the females love when females are there because they feel safe, I guess. So you have fun. And then they have amateur night. I'm not going to lie. I made $100 on amateur night. I have my
clothes. Hey.
Yeah. You know, but amateur night, you keep your clothes on. But you know, you work the pole a little bit.
Yeah. Get it how you get it.
Yeah, why not? And we only had one time here in El Paso where like one of the strip clubs here, they had a comedy show there. So that was, it was fun for me. The crowd loved me. The guys, not so much. They were like, how do you tell jokes when the strippers is walking around trying to get money? I'm like, you walk around too. What?
Mm-hmm.
Support.
Yes. Support female entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So encourage them. That's what I'm saying. So you're in Fort Bliss, right? So you joined. You're at Fort Hood with your brother.
Right. I stayed there for 6 years. Do you know this bum? He decides, like, the first year I'm there, he goes to Korea. So he basically left me to make my own friends.
How'd that go?
Pretty good. Fort Hood is so big. I was on East Fort Hood, and he was on North Fort Hood. So it was, like, maybe a 20-minute drive from one side of the post to the other side of the post. So instead of hanging over there, he had the bougie rooms. They had, like, their rooms were apartment style. So apartment mm-hmm. style, meaning they only had two man rooms. They had a bathroom in their room. I was in the ghetto where mm-hmm. it was a Bay Area, one hallway, and your bathroom is in the hall, down the hall somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that was not okay. That was not fun. You know, can you imagine trying to carry all your stuff? You're trying to go down a hallway. Yeah, it's not fun.
I mean, it sounds like college, to be honest with you.
It is, right? But the weirdest thing is, like, that's where I made all my friends. And then we would have, like, because the way that the building was at the hallway, you would leave your door open. We all just go hang out and, like, have drinking contests, and we just partied. So it really was like a college dorm. We just partied.
So what were you doing in the military? Like, what was your job?
So I'm a 92 Alpha and 92 Yankee. It's both supply. So I do both classes supply. So I work with, so I can order you uniforms. I can order you pens, paper, pencils. If you need a tent, I got you. If you're a mechanic and you need to turn some wrenches out and you lost your wrench, I got you. So,
wow.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm a quartermaster by trade, and our slogan is supply or die.
So, okay.
Yes. I'm your best friend.
Can I ask what your rank is at this point?
I'm still a staff sergeant.
What is that? An E5? Oh, E6. Okay.
Yeah, so it's like I'm in charge without being in charge.
Because the highest is what? E7?
No, the highest is E9, sergeant major.
Okay. So you're for those of y'all listening, she's pretty high up there though. Don't let her fool you. She's trying to be humble out here, but no, she's the boss.
Well, because you have to come in, when you come up to the ranks, I think you are more humble because you know what it's like to be down in the trenches and getting the dirty jobs. Like, being from Brooklyn, New York, I didn't know I was allergic to grass until I'm out there with a pair of scissors and they're like, pull up the weeds, and you're like, what's weeds? So now I tell people, hey, go pull up the grass.
Yeah. So now So what happens next? So you're at Fort Hood, right? You said you were there for 6 years. What were you doing? Like, what's going on?
So at Fort Hood, that's where I went and got my very first deployment. In 2000, we went to Kuwait. And this was like Operation Desert Storm was happening. And it was like, there was nothing. We get to Kuwait and there's nothing but sand. No buildings, no internet, no cell phones. You're just in the middle of the desert with all these people. And you're like, all right, so where's the party? There's no parties. No parties.
Mm-hmm. So what were you doing? Like, are you allowed to talk about it? I don't know if I can ask. I can
talk about it because it was like back in 2000. No, like, so my job, I was just pushing out supplies. So we have, so the special forces, infantry, like the guys who are on the front lines that really deal with the enemy, we just make sure that they get their supplies, whether it be food, rations, new uniforms, pens, papers, whatever they need. But mostly for Kuwait missions, it was making sure the vehicles were up and running because a lot of vehicles got shot down.
What? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
just from like,
because we're not used to driving in sand.
Right.
And then like Call of Duty in the movie Doom, and that's us.
Okay. And what was that like for you, like just being out there? Like,
well, for me it was scary because I've never been away from home. Like when I leave,
right,
I go to like Bear Mountain, I go to like Six Flags in New Jersey. But you're talking about getting on a plane and going to Kuwait of all people, of all places, and you don't speak the language. So it's not like you're going to learn like Farsi and Pashto overnight. Mm-hmm. And then remember, we didn't have Google Translate. So if that's not your native language and you don't have a translator, you're just over there winging it.
So were you guys like out in a town or something like that?
We were at Camp Doha at the time. And I only got to Kuwait City once. I had to go for an eye doctor appointment. And for some reason, the army did not bring eye doctors. So we went to Kuwait City and it was beautiful.
Yeah.
You get to go in civilian clothes, so you like look normal. But the thing is, for a woman, so in Kuwait at the time, remember this is 2000. So at the time, for a woman, we're not allowed to look a man in the eye. We're not even allowed to talk to a man. And we're supposed to be covered up, but they understood, like with us, our different cultures of America, we're not going to be covered up with the whole hijab.
Right.
Thing. So we were okay with that. So we had escorts everywhere we went. If you're a woman, you have to be in a group. If you're in a group, you have to have like one or two males in your group because they can walk up to you and be like, oh, you're my wife. And I'm like, no, you didn't buy me dinner first.
Mm-hmm. They could just claim you is what you said. Yeah. Wow, that's wild.
Yes, like just off the street. And I got in trouble because if you see the eyes, like my eyes get me in a lot of trouble. You know, I can't change them. They're my real eyes. I can't change them.
Uh-huh. So, okay. So what happened? You went to this eye doctor and then...
Oh, yeah. You go to eye doctor. They check your eyes, dilate your eyes. Hopefully that your translator doesn't leave you in the middle of Kuwait. So we did go to the mall. We went to Kuwait City. They had like a 4-story mall. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Over there. I brought back some like elegant robes and dress. And then from there, like I was only there like, what, 4 months from April to December? No, December to April. We came back in April 2001. So it was pretty...
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. We lost one friend out there.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Thank you. Regina Martinez. Yeah, we lost Regina. Yeah. And it, like your first loss is always the hardest loss because in the army, you see it on TV and in the movies. And then you're like, oh, yeah, we do some of that. Some of that's badass. Some of that's really cool. But when it's actually happening in real life, it's a game changer.
Yeah, no, I appreciate everything that the military does because I personally don't think that I have the metal or the ability to withstand things that you guys endure.
Yeah, so, we call it intestinal fortitude.
Yep, that is the word. I've heard that before. I was like, yeah, I definitely don't have that. So we can agree there. So what happened next?
So from there, we came back. We had like a big old ceremony. Which is also, it's always fun to have a ceremony. Everybody's like cheering for you when you get off the plane. It was a little different for us because like I said, we lost Regina and her best friend was there pregnant and everything. We're like, hey, awkward, welcome home. But we were glad to be there and we welcomed baby Kayla into the world. And I stayed there until 2003. And I went to Fort Stewart, Georgia.
Okay. Oh, how was that different?
It was a lot of green trees and grass and ghosts because nobody told me Savannah, Georgia is haunted.
I've heard that before.
What type of person you are, you can feel the auras. You can feel the room change. You might not be able to see certain things, but you know it's happening. And I also developed a gambling habit. I had a friend turn me on to gambling on a little steamboat. There's actually a steamboat that goes out and you pay 10 bucks unless you're military. You show your military ID, you get in for free. And they give you 10 bucks to just gamble for free. That's also where I learned that I suffer from motion sickness, like seasickness. So I'm on this boat trying to gamble and win a couple hundred bucks and I'm eating olives. So it's fun times.
So wait. You said you get like seasickness from being on boats?
Yeah.
Well, thank God you were born in this country. You imagine if you had to come over with our parents? No, I'm just kidding.
Like, yeah, we have to leave you here. I'm like, no, I'll just throw
up. Right?
Like, feeding the fish. Yes, my intestinal fortitude.
So you're in Stuart, Georgia. What's going on there? So walk me through what that was like.
All right, so I get to Fort Stewart, Georgia. I'm in a 92nd Engineers Black Diamonds with pride. So I don't know if you have soldiers that listen to this. So I was there from 2006 to 2009 because we went to Iraq for the first time. And I literally...
I hear it's beautiful there.
It is awesome because that's where we was doing Latin night. What a...
Really? In Iraq?
At the pool. Beautiful pool. It was like, I don't know how to swim. Don't judge me. So everybody just... But like, you're from an island. That doesn't mean we swim in the water. So we're in Iraq. And yeah, they have movie theaters. We have Baskin Robbins. I know because I was there every Saturday. and I was watching Hairspray. So we had like a lot of movie nights. It was awesome. And for us, the movies are free. And so I had like a simple job. Again, I'm still working with the mechanics, ordering parts. And the cool thing is mechanics work late. I don't. So once I give you your equipment and you have to go work, sorry for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have some people argue about that. Like, no, if I have to work late, you should work late too. Why? What do you want to do? Like, I learned how to change oils. I can change a tire. Anything else in the Army that requires mechanics? Mm-mm.
Not for you.
I'm coming to get you because you're the mechanic. You picked your job, you know?
Right.
Fine. You pick being a mechanic. You turn wrenches. I order wrenches. That's it.
You're like, I don't even feel bad. That's what it is.
No, you know.
So you're there. You're forced to. You're in Iraq. Was that better than Kuwait for you?
Big time better because now we have the internet. So we have the MWR, which is the I forgot what the M stands for, but welfare. But basically, you go in there. They have free internet. They even have a gaming room. So if you like to play video games, and I'm a gamer. So you just sit there. They have whatever was donated to the community. Everything is donated to the United States. So that they ship it over to us. We're playing, you know, Call of Duty, playing Tekken, whatever. And the phones. And they donate the little phone cards back in the day where you had that long number you had to type in the back.
Yeah.
Your phone cards where you can call home. And Iraq, I actually was married by then. So I was married with all three boys because I left when my twins were 6 months old. So wow. I had to call home. And my thing was like, when I'm overseas, I don't like calling home because I don't want you waiting for a call and you don't get it.
And right.
Door. And so I didn't want to be on a set schedule. And at the time, my husband and I fought about that. He's like, you don't call enough. And guess what? The one time I called, there was a loud boom in the background and everything went and faded to black. Phones went dead. It's called a blackout. So that's when everything goes black because they don't want you on the phone telling people what happened or worse. Like, you just don't want to like put bad juju out there until you figure out all the events that happened first.
Right.
So when I finally did, it was like a week before I was able to use the phone again. Because what civilians don't realize is when we're overseas, we're not the only ones there. So you're like at 3 a.m. waiting online to use the phone. And if you have to be at work at like 6, you're just not going to do it, you know?
Uh-huh.
So that's why we liked Afghanistan. Because then when we got to Afghanistan, you had internet in your room. And that's when Skype happened. So when Skype was up, but then Afghanistan, I got divorced. So.
Oh, okay. That escalated quickly.
It's like you start off, you're single, you come on in, you're learning the ropes, you're coming up through the ranks. Then you get married when they told you not to get married. But then the baby comes, you're like, oh, I could do this. You know, but like my marriage failed because he got jealous. So because in the Army, it's really easy to get promoted. You know, you get promoted, more rank, more money, but it also comes with more responsibility. And
right. People
don't realize that the military is more predominantly male oriented. So us females, sometimes you're working with everybody's just males. So he got jealous. He's like, oh, you know him? The guy in my office? Yeah, that's Bob. Like,
yeah.
That, like, what's the issue? You're like, you work with men. No shit. Yeah, yeah. You know? Like, yeah.
It's that's awesome. How this works.
Yeah, like, who do you want me to work? Now, I get it if I was medical and I was a nurse, but no, I work where it's gender specific. It's mostly males. You know?
That's wild.
Right. So 2006 to 2009, that was Iraq. I came back in 2009 and I was pregnant with my daughter, my fourth baby, fourth and last, hopefully. And then we got stationed here at Fort Bliss. And here at Fort Bliss, I've been here since 2009. I deployed 2011 to 2012 to Afghanistan the first time, and then the second time was 2014.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to you talk about your deployment so casually. I'm like, yo, can we talk about this? Like, damn, this sounds.
Yeah. As long as this is specific to me, I can't tell you like the other things that happen to other people. Like, yeah,
sure.
There's people here and there. It's always like a sad day. You know, we're there when
right.
And then the hero flights. True to story, I love the hero flights. So what a hero flight is, it's a fallen soldier, and we're out there, we're the first memorial service that they have. We have the whole memorial service, and when they take the casket and they walk the casket onto the C-130 that flies you home, we're saluting you as you pass by us, and then we drop our salute. And then once the plane takes off, you might have seen it where they shoot these fireworks out and make it wings. That's a hero flight.
Oh, no, I've never seen that. Should I YouTube it?
You should be able to.
Okay.
A lot of hero flights. And, like, they're the most beautiful way to pay tribute to a fallen soldier. Now, the only thing we don't talk about is, like, how they passed away. Because, back in the day, suicide was, like, a big thing. And the army didn't pay your family that insurance money if it was a suicide. Now, they've changed it since then. Now, they're realizing, like, PTSD... the stress of how many deployments, if you have deployments back to back to back, luckily mines were spaced out. But some soldiers, they're going like every 6 months, they're going every year, and they're going for 15 months at a time. And you're
right
about what's going on at home. And it's like, it's really hard because you can't be at both places. So if you're downrange, we call it downrange. So wherever you are, if you're in Afghanistan, Syria, Egypt, you're downrange. You can't control what's happening at home. And especially when you have children, like whoever's watching your kids, you have to trust them to heart. You're hoping nothing bad happens. You're hoping that when you come home, they don't resent you. They're not mad at you. Like, oh, you left us. Like my family members, like we've had that falling out. My mom's like, oh, you're going to go off and fight this man's war, but who's going to raise your kids? You know, I'm like, they're dead. What's the problem?
Yeah.
And people don't realize that. It is a sacrifice. And they're like, yeah, but it's an unnecessary sacrifice. Like, you're choosing to do this. And I'm like, yeah, but if I don't do it, who will? And I don't think a lot of people realize that. Like, all the wars that are happening are over there, not over here. We can
buy
cars. We can go to the movies. We can go anywhere we want to. Over there, you have a little five-year-old staring at you, ready to shoot you with an AK. And I'm going to be honest with you, it's me or them. And we have a saying where it's rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. You know, so you got to do what you got to do.
Look, and I'm going to take this moment out to say, I've said this before on this podcast, I have the utmost respect for our military and our service members throughout the world, and thank all of you for all the sacrifices that you make day in, day out. But moreover, I'm going to go one step further, and I've said this in the past, I want to say thank you to all the military families out there for all the support that you put in supporting our heroes as they're, protecting our country on a day-to-day basis. You know, I know it's hard, you know, moving at a moment's notice and like having to be, you know, give everything up for someone else's job. So I thank you and I salute all of you for everything that you do.
Yes, thank you. Like I said, my marriage didn't survive, but I didn't get mad at him. And then everybody's like, why aren't you mad at him? Because I understand. That's hard. You know, that's hard to ask someone to take care of everything or nothing.
Of course.
You know? So, yeah.
And like the people I'm thankful to, like, yes, I'm thankful to you and everything you do, but people see what you do. Yeah. I'm thankful to your kids. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like your kids, like everything, all the sacrifices that they make, you know, so that we can live this dialogue. Like, people don't talk about that stuff.
Right. And I got lucky. My kids are still smart because I take credit for raising them. You know, this semester they F students because it's online school. They're trying to use COVID as their advantage. But my kids, I am so grateful that I did not have kids that grew up and but they're not thug life. They're not running through the house cursing and carrying on. I got real lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm grateful.
Let me ask you this. If we can go back, what exactly is it that you would change?
I would have came in as an officer. I should have came in as an officer and started getting that $3,000 a month at the top and then going up from that. Because as an officer, you get people making coffee. I drink coffee now. I didn't back then. But I would have came in as an officer. The money, like, you're still doing the same dirt work. But when you deploy, their living arrangements are so much better. They have their own private bathrooms. Porcelain. They have porcelain in their bathrooms. I know because I had to clean it. So that's where I'm trying to go. You know, like better duty assignments. I mean, not like I said, Fort Hood was nice. Fort Bliss is nice. But did you know that there's a duty station in the Caribbean? I could be on an island.
Where?
I can't tell you. But... Yes, there's, because I don't know. But there's like a map, and you can go on a map, and you're like, what? There's duty stations over here? You know, I could have been in St. Thomas somewhere with serving coconuts. I don't know. But
that'd have been nice.
Yes. But no, y'all put me in a desert of all places, the desert. It's dry. Guys, I'd be tall. I'm like, no, I'm 5'3". Stop it.
I feel like, wouldn't you love it if there was a duty station in like Puerto Rico or the Dominican Republic?
There is a duty station in Puerto Rico, but it's hard to get. And usually the station in Puerto Rico, they want to be stationed in the States. I'm like, why? They're like, because they get paid more in the States than they do in Puerto Rico.
I guess that makes sense.
That cola. That's why like they pay you like almost $4,000 just for the cost of living allowance. And that's just for your housing.
Yeah, but okay, stop it though, because you're in El Paso. Like for like $150K, you can buy a mansion. Don't play that game.
No. Well, okay, I gotta get my credit score back up first. Yeah.
But tell me I'm wrong. Tell me you can't get a huge house in El Paso for like $150K.
$150K, you can get one for $80,000. It's 5 bedrooms. What the?
See, see.
In a nice neighborhood, they got some nice.
In New York, you're gonna pay $4,000 for a matchbox. Stop it.
You're right.
So. So going back into it, so the biggest thing that you would change is how you went in. Would you be an officer? Would you still be working in supplies?
Yes, because you still have officers that work supply. They work maintenance, quartermaster, whatever. So I think I still like supply because I was able to, like, to order stuff for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I like shopping. And what best job to have is like you spend an army's money and you're shopping.
Mm-hmm.
I got Gerber's, camel bags, and you know. I don't have I'm not the one that went crazy and got like the 70-inch TVs and ceiling fans, the industrial strength ceiling fans. I didn't do that.
Okay.
Yeah, but I got some cute little pans. Stuff that you really can't get in trouble for. Like you can get a slap on the wrist. That was my level.
Got it. So is there anything else you would have changed besides the way you went into the military?
You know what? Honestly, I wouldn't have gotten married. I think I'm grateful for my children. But I think I just would have been okay as a single parent without the marriage thing, because what I learned, and the bad part is I only know the Army, because like I said, I've done 22 years. So I grew up in the military lifestyle. And when you get divorced, they automatically get half. And we were only married for 8 years. Yeah, half. We were only married for 8 years. But you mean to tell me my whole career from when I raised my hand to join and serve, and then you just come along and we're together for this little bit amount of time and you get half. And you weren't there for the blood, sweat, and tears that I had to go through, basic and AIT, the little bit of hints of racism that I had to endure, the little bit of jealousy I got from other females. Like, I get told a lot, oh, you're too pretty to be in the Army. Why are you here? Things like that. And then for you, like the person that I love, just walk off with half and you get benefits for life. And I'm just like, but you didn't do anything. That's weird. You know?
Is that how they try to discourage you from just like marrying anyone?
Pretty much. Because half. Now I understand J-Lo. Everybody getting on J-Lo. No, she knows the state laws. It's a statute of limitations. You married for oh so long. That person is entitled to half.
That's a lot. So besides that, so let's talk about that for a second. How do you think things would have been different if you didn't get married? Like, let's explore that.
If I didn't get married, I would have been... My son is over there like... He's like, what? I love you.
Sorry.
No, you would be here. That's what I said. I love my kids. No, if you are not. You would be, because I got pregnant and I got married because I got pregnant. I got married at 6 months pregnant with him, okay? And he's the oldest.
Okay.
But
he's your favorite. I get it.
No, surprisingly, I don't have favorites. It's really hard to have favorites before. I don't know. But I think that was only, my only thing was like getting married, because it's like I started having wandering eyes because my ex-husband is not a soldier. He's a civilian. He's a little on the poop mm-hmm. side. And then you see all these guys in like uniforms with muscles. I'm like, hey. You know, so I'm just like, maybe. I mean, I'm not gonna say I was out there having too much of a good time, but I was. But I'm very faithful. When I'm in a relationship, I'm very faithful. So that's not mm-hmm. what you have to worry about. But it's the I've seen things in the military, like people that are married, and then they go and then they get deployed or they go somewhere for a little bit, and then they're not married anymore. If you catch the drift,
right?
So it's like, well, what's the purpose of being married if you're gonna go and have all this fun on the side? And then I've seen it to where people, like, it happened to me. Like, I came home and I'm a stepmom. Like, oh, there's actually a kid. How'd that happen? And then with a straight face, you want me to help you raise it? Because she did call me. She goes, hey, I need help. Well, you didn't ask to borrow my husband, so good luck with that, girl. Okay. So that's why.
Well, that escalated quickly.
It did. So for me, the sanctity of marriage and everything it stood for, it kind of left. I don't have that same... that the same oompa, like growing up with the fairy tales, like, oh, this guy's going to whisk me off my feet. We're going to be happily ever after, the house, the car, the kids, going on vacations, family trips. And it was destroyed. You know, it was destroyed for me. So I'm done with marriage. And it affected me so much so that I'm barely getting into relationship territory. Like, I'm barely starting to date. And I got divorced in, 2012. So that, for me, was, like, a big thing. And it's, 2021. So it's like, ah. But I've seen people, like, have 5-6 marriages. I'm like, well, go ahead, Elizabeth Taylor. Go get it.
Okay. So I want to say thank you again for joining us on the Revisionary Podcast. Before I let you go, we have two traditions on this podcast.
Okay.
The first is, we like to highlight a charity or an organization at the end of every episode. Do you have a charity or an organization for us?
I do. I don't know if you've heard of the Charge Syndrome Foundation. The word charge, CHARGE, is a multifacial deformity. It's all-encompassing. It's a life expectancy of 75%. Well, my twins are Charge Syndrome twins. And I've been part of that group now for the whole 15 years of their lifespan. And they're found on Facebook, so you can go on Facebook and research them. And the Charge Syndrome Foundation has a support group page on Facebook where people from all over the world, we gather here and ask questions about our children, how to further their life expectancy, or how to deal with just day-to-day instances that may occur.
Okay, perfect. And the second tradition that we have on this podcast is that we like to ask our guests to share a quick childhood story that puts a smile on their face or just generally makes them feel warm inside. Do you have one for us?
I do. I was just talking about this the other day. Like, all my cousins have birthdays at McDonald's. My brothers and I did not. We're just like, wait a minute.
Really?
Yeah.
I had those.
Did you?
Yeah. I'm dating myself now, but it's the McDonald's in the Bronx right on, was it Clarington Avenue? On 176 right across to where I think, it's right on Webster Avenue.
Right.
It's like that big McDonald's in the Bronx.
The first one that they built.
No, I don't think that's the first one, but it's a big McDonald's. If you're from the Bronx, you know what I'm talking about. Right. The big McDonald's on Webster Ave.
No way.
Right by 176 or something like that.
And they had Ronald McDonald come out and do the whole happy birthday.
Everything. I remember we used to get the little boxes and the little burgers and the little... What? Yo, those McDonald's birthdays were lit.
Yes, that's the only time I liked my cousins, because they would always invite us over. Like, we have a birthday at McDonald's. And now when we old, now that we're older, we're like, dude, you really had a birthday at McDonald's? And today's kids will never know.
No, they'll never know. Thank you for sharing that with us, because that brought me back and put a smile on my face. I was like, man, that reminds me of my childhood, man. I used to love those. I used to love, because they, for those of you guys listening, in case this never happened to you, you used to come in, they used to give you a little crown. Like, we used to go play in the ball pit. Like, you really were the king for the day.
Right.
And also, as a kid, who didn't love McDonald's?
Okay. But then the whole crew came out. Hamburglar came out, Grimace, the Birdie, everybody, the whole crew.
I mean, I grew up in the Bronx, so we just got Ronald, and that was it. We were just content with that, you know what I'm saying?
Okay. Well, in Brooklyn.
So, no, but that's pretty cool. No, we did not get the whole crew. I want to say thank you to you for joining us. This has been wonderful, and I really appreciate, you know, you coming in and sharing your military stories and opening up about that stuff. So that's been pretty cool. Before I let you go, do you have any last words for the Revisionaries?
Thank you for listening and enjoying our time together. I hope to be here again. And you guys keep supporting us comics. We're out here to make you laugh and entertain you. That's what we're here for. Use us.
Use us. Where can we follow you?
I'm on Facebook as Sharita. My name, I don't know if you can see my name, but it's S-H-A-R-I-T-A. Sometimes you have to put the Gonzalez on there. I'm also on Instagram with that same name. I'm on Twitter. I'm trying to get more than 3 likes on Twitter, so help a sister out. And guess what? Nighttime Shenanigans podcast with Sharita. We film every 2 Saturdays. So you can also find me with my own podcast. Hopefully Juan Carlos will come on.
Anytime. Anytime. You're more than welcome. All right. Bye.
I always appreciate the stories about the military because it's an interesting perspective. You know, you don't always get to hear the full story. So just listening to how the military shapes someone's life has always been a point of fascination for me. And, you know, you guys know that I fully support our military and that I'm very thankful for the things that they do and the sacrifices that they make. So I think it's pretty cool that she came on here and, you know, she was willing to talk about a little bit about how the military had affected her. And quite honestly, I'm just really glad that we had an opportunity to hear from her. And honestly, I always encourage you Revisionaries to go out and, you know, interact with our guests. If you like them, throw them a follow. You know, make sure you follow them on Instagram and reach out to them, talk to them. And I don't know, go to see one of their shows. You know, maybe you could tell them that, you know, you quote unquote met them on the Revisionary podcast or something cool like that. But either way, I'm really excited to have had her. This is pretty cool. And as always, I want to say thanks to all of you for listening. This is the